fifth case for argument this morning is United States against Peters.
May it please the court. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Christopher Carroll for the appellant, John Peters III. This case is on direct appeal from a judgment of conviction entered on a plea of guilty for conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute heroin. Appellant appeals the denial of his motion to suppress, having waived all other grounds for appeal under his plea deal. The issue on appeal is whether a seizure of a vehicle violated the Fourth Amendment based on the issue on appeal that we present is whether or not the court erred in finding that the Fourth Amendment was complied with based upon a traffic infraction that was not proved based on proper foundation. And, Your Honor, the subrogation rights of an insurance company in an automobile accident case receive greater protections than the defendant's Fourth Amendment rights in this case.
But if we were to find that the initial stop was valid, what basis would there be for suppressing the subsequent search of the vehicle? The driver didn't have a valid license. The vehicle was going to be towed. I assume an inventory search would follow, and that wouldn't require a warrant, would it?
It would not, Your Honor. However, that does not seem to have been the basis of the court's ruling. The court specifically found that a traffic infringement was proven by a preponderance of the government's evidence. That traffic infraction was following too closely, and the officer testified that the two-second rule was violated. He testified to a range of speeds without any testimony as to how he arrived at those speeds. He did not testify whether he clocked the vehicles. He did not testify to any specific speed detection device such as radar.
Yeah, but the problem is this. Indiana has this two-second rule. And unless you find that an officer isn't credible, he's driving too closely under the rule because, you know, officers do this all the time without doing all the things, you know, that you're noting.
I understand, Your Honor, but the burden of the government is preponderance of the evidence to prove that there was a lawful basis for stopping a vehicle.
Well, the agent so testified that they were driving within 2 seconds. There was a video to back him up, and the district court believed it. You're asking us to review a credibility finding that was based on a combination of oral and video evidence. And we say pretty often that somebody who asks the Court of Appeals to review a credibility finding is whistling in the dark.
Well, permitting me to whistle in the dark a little, Your Honor, Judge Easterbrook. The problem with the video is that the testimony at trial was that the video did not capture the infraction, and in fact, the pursuing police vehicles were boxing in the two suspect vehicles. That's recreated on the chart in the very opinion that we challenge on appeal. So basically, the two vehicles that were being pursued, their behavior was affected by the pursuing police vehicles, and that's what was captured on video.
It's an argument you can make to the district court, but when the district court doesn't buy it, you need to show us that the district court has taken leave of her senses.
Well, I don't believe that the standard of review is leave of senses, Judge Easterbrook, but I understand it is a high standard of review. I understand that.
Leaves of
I'm sorry. All right. I understand that. However, the simple fact of the matter is that there was no foundation laid to show the initial basis for the traffic stop. Nothing was in the record, just one paragraph of testimony. The Indiana traffic manual is used as basically a trial aid. It's not credible that he was consulting the manual while he was following these vehicles, especially since the court granted a co-defendant's motion to suppress based upon that officer's testimony that he was multitasking. And also, U.S. versus Muriel, which is the one case cited in the court's opinion approving the two-second rule, really isn't the strong authority for that proposition, because really that rule is approved in dicta. The facts under Muriel were that the trial judge decided it was a close call whether the two-second rule was violated, but then went on to justify the traffic stop based upon reckless driving, facts which are not present here. So the initial stop has to be justified based upon what the officer observed. And Judge Rovner, he never would have reached the point of finding out that there was a suspended driver's license if, in fact, he did not make this determination that there is a traffic infraction. Now, the two-second rule is not a qualitative rule. It's not subjective. It is quantitative, bright line, and calculational, and it is used by the government to add greater weight to the government's position that a traffic infraction was proved. But the simple fact of the matter is that this foundation simply doesn't fly. It wouldn't fly in a personal injury court, in a state court proceeding, and it shouldn't fly here. The government's burden is to prove something, to prove compliance with the Fourth Amendment by clear and convincing, strike that, by preponderance of the evidence, and the evidence doesn't preponderate on the issue of finding a traffic infraction under this specific rule because of the absence of foundation. And moving beyond the issue of the absence of any foundation is the fact that the officer's testimony regarding the presence of the marijuana in the car, once he stopped it, simply has too many problems. The simple fact of the matter is the government briefs characterizes the odor of marijuana pouring out of the vehicle, but all they find are a few small particles which are never even tested for marijuana. That completely contradicts the argument that there's this overpowering odor of marijuana once the windows are rolled down. The small amount is a problem. The fact that the odor was supposed to be overpowering is a problem when there are canine dogs at the next vehicle, the next suspect vehicle, and the officer doesn't pull over, summon over the canine dog to confirm his aromatic suspicion. There's nothing to confirm the officer's subjective testimony that there was the overwhelming odor of marijuana.
How far apart were those two vehicles when they were stopped?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Pretty far, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so. But even so, they were still all part of the same operation. Yeah. And they were talking to each other over the phone. Right. And they could have communicated with each other over the phone. And he could have called on the phone for a drug dog. And the government's response to the point about not testing the marijuana is very troubling in this context, because the government says that the amount of marijuana is below departmental protocols to seize and test. But if the amount was so small, again, that contradicts the testimony of the officer that the odor was overpowering. Also, I'd like to return to the point about the two-second rule.
I don't know that. I don't even smoke cigarettes, so I don't know what that. I've heard smell of the marijuana before. It's a pungent smell, so it's not like it's something that is, if we're smoking in the car or whatever, that's going to come out. Now, overwhelming or obvious or what? Because the whole problem is that then because we don't know any of this, but I assume they found this drill. And then later on, it matched up with the other car.
Correct.
But we're not there. This is they pleaded. So we're simply this whole stop. Find some money, and they find a drill, and it goes from there. And we don't need to know where it goes from there because they've pleaded.
Correct.
So I understand why you're pressing this, but it seems to me that if somebody is driving too close and they're at a certain speed and. I'm going to say it's a phony stop. It's enough to where they did stop, and then this other stuff develops.
Thank you for your question. My time is up, except for rebuttal time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. DeBrota.
May it please the court, counsel. The officer in question, Officer Ernestis, it says in the record, and he so testified, is a crash reconstructionist. He's also a very experienced officer. He knows about speed. He knows about the significance of the two-second rule. He testifies.
But the district court concluded in that footnote 6 that the videotape established that the sign was, in fact, traveling too closely. But the officer testified that the violation occurred before the videotape was activated. So how do we resolve that inconsistency?
It's actually not inconsistent if we look carefully at it. Here's how it works. This recording system in the police car caches so much data. And when you then activate your lights, it preserves that. What the district court had was the data that was preserved because of the subsequent signaling of the lights. And the judge looked at that, and if you look at it, you'll see the same thing. The car is still too close at that time. That's a demonstrable fact. That is what is going on in footnote 6. The judge also said carefully in the record she was going to look at the videotape herself and reach her own conclusion. As Judge Easterbrook has pointed out, that's essentially checkmate. You have a judge looking at a video and writing footnote 6 and reaching the conclusion of law that there was a violation occurring on the video. Now, the testimony that went with that from Ernestis was the vehicle was traveling between 60 and 64 miles an hour and was 50 to 75 feet away when he notices the violation, and it's continuing thereafter, which is how some of it is caught on the tape. Now, the idea that there's a foundational problem should have triggered a foundational objection, yet that never happened in the district court. And we had laid the foundation in the testimony that we were dealing with an officer who was very experienced, was a training officer for the Indiana Law Enforcement Academy, and an accident reconstructionist. I imagine the reason they didn't object to foundation then is because it would have made it much worse. Also, of course, the officer has equipment in the vehicle that can register speed. They didn't cross him on that point. They could have, and they didn't. So foundation is not a reason to attack a district court's finding. The idea that they're whistling in the dark is further confirmed by the point that after cross-examination, Officer Ernestis' testimony was clear and credible, and there is nothing in the cross-examination that casts any doubt on the distance the car was following closely or on the smell of marijuana. Now, it's been an interesting day in this court. We've graduated from pigs now to marijuana, but it's very important to notice this is burnt marijuana. That's the testimony, burnt marijuana. That is not what's found on...
I think the plaintiffs in the first case would have preferred burnt pigs.
They probably would have. That might even smell good, depending on the form. But he pulls
not
off...
Not anymore.
I think I agree
you
there, too.
You read those briefs. Yeah.
I don't think I will. He pulls off the defendant's body after the defendant lowers the window, unburnt marijuana in little flakes. Okay? He holds up a stem of it, the record shows, and looks at it closely. Based on his training and experience, he says, this is weed, this is marijuana. He says this directly to Mr. Peters. Okay? That observation, the recovery of it from plain view, comes after the defendant lowers the window of the car, and we have the wafting emanation of burnt marijuana coming out of the car. The officer's observation of that is confirmed by the audio and videotape, which shows him saying, hey, I'm smelling this, right then. So the consistent statements of the officer, both as to what he said to the driver, you were following too closely. The driver, by the way, apologized. What he said to Mr. Peters, I smell marijuana, that's marijuana. He's saying that right to the guy. All of that occurs roughly 128 seconds after he's asked the driver about following too closely. So this officer is doing what he's trained to do. He's within his level of experience. Now, essentially you're being asked today to reverse a conviction because they're suggesting a foundational problem could be sufficient to allow you to conclude that the district judge got this wrong. This court has said many times that a court's choice of whom to believe should not be vulnerable to a finding of clear error. Here there's no error at all, still less a clear error. There is no evidence in the record at all.
Yes, if a district judge believes that water boils at 50 degrees, that's going to be a problem. I take it your observation is qualified by the fact that here the district judge's finding is not contradicted by either any objective evidence or any rules of physics.
That's correct. Or at least something in the record from which you could reach an inference to that effect. You can boil water at 50 degrees with a lot of different barometric pressure. There's nothing like that here. There's no question directed to determine that. And if the cross-examination failed to uncover that, if they did, they could have called the driver perhaps, and they didn't. But we know what the driver said at the time. He apologizes for following too closely. It's in the tape. They could have called Mr. Peters. They didn't. So what we have in the record is a cross-examination which failed, a district judge who didn't buy the defense motion to suppress, and we have findings of fact which are supported by the records. So we'd ask you to affirm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Carroll?
Yes, just very briefly.
I don't want to belabor the court. I just want to rely on my briefs, except for one point. The government argues about Officer Ernst's testimony, his experience. The problem with this is that on cross-examination, he was asked point blank, all we've got is your nose, and he says, yes. That's all we've got, is his testimony that he smelled marijuana. The particle, nothing was confirmed by testing of the particles, nothing was confirmed by a drug dog, and the testimony itself is inherently inconsistent regarding the overpowering effect of this odor and the amount of the particulate drugs alleged to have been in the car. And regarding the issue of the video capturing these vehicles, the defense argued at trial that the vehicles were being boxed in by the police. The trial court dealt with this on a waiver issue, citing the case of Kawasaki versus Bombardier. The government does not cite any case in its brief on that issue.
Thank you, counsel.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement.